You are about to hear the March 4th Local Talk program, which has been advertised during the past few days. In our promo, we promised it would be something you could hear only on KHOI. That is true. But the anticipated interview with Laurel Bergmeier, the producer of Iowa Public Television's documentary, Iowa's Century Farms, which premiered last night, did not happen. What did happen was an hour of surprise and discovery, but I won't spoil it by telling you how it happened. Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, 89.1 FM, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. I am one of your hosts for today, together with my co-host Paul Wearson, who is also the narrator for the Iowa Public Television documentary, Iowa Century Farms, which aired last night. Hi, Paul. I'm looking forward to your insights into that program, which is the subject of the first part of Local Talk today. What do you have to tell us about this morning's show?
Well, hello, Susan, and thanks for the introduction. I am looking forward to talking with the producer of the documentary, Laurel Bauer Bergmeier, and in a few minutes we'll be talking with her. But first we need to tell our listeners what's coming up during this hour today. The main portion will deal with Century Farms and Century Farmers. But we'll conclude the show with Marty Miller and Lance Sumter. They'll be giving us a preview of next week's Local Talk show with the Harmelays, a live music show in the morning, March 11th, which will culminate in a concert at the Pantorium that very evening on the 11th at 7 p.m.
How are we going to begin this morning, Paul?
Well, since the documentary started with several farmers talking about what their farms meant to them and how their farms are not big enough to support two generations at the same time, we're going to talk with Ben Wise, who's facing these very issues in some very creative ways. We're calling him at the school where he teaches ag education and instruction for the FFA, the Future Farmers of America.
Hello. Ben, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Great.
Ben, it's good to see you. I'm Paul. I'm seeing you through the airwaves of broadcasting, and welcome to our program. Now, Ben, did it mean a lot to you growing up that your farm had been in your family for so many generations?
Yeah, I always found that to be a very unique and very prideful aspect of our farm.
You studied to become an ag instructor and educator. Where did you study?
At South Dakota State University. I actually went to Iowa Central Community College in Fort Dodge for 2 years and then transferred to South Dakota State.
And when did you come back to Iowa?
It's been a few years now. I took a job right away teaching in Nebraska and then decided to come back to the farm and try to see how that could work. And I was working with my dad for a little while and then a teaching job came open right in our school district, so I decided to apply for that, and that's where I currently am. We found that the farm wasn't really supporting both of us and fulfilling all of our needs, so that came open kind of right at the right time and worked out well for both of us.
We're having some technical difficulties with our phones, and our interview with Ben Wise has been interrupted. So I'll just talk a little about the things we discussed on the phone yesterday in the hopes that we can reconnect later in the program. We don't have Ben, and I'm really sorry because I'm really eager to hear what you have to say about this program. I just actually saw the names of the people who are your mentors. Scott and Julie Wilbur in Boone are your mentors in diversifying your crops because, like most farmers, you're growing row crops. You're growing corn and beans, and your farm. Well, you can tell us the exact acreage, but it's between 200 and 300 acres. And this is, of course, by today's standards, it's a small farm. You are farming with your father, and obviously he's doing a lot of the farming, and you both need incomes. And so the one of the ways to increase that is to grow other crops or other agricultural products. And so it would be very interesting to find out what you have done and what you've learned through this program. Last night, when we were hearing what the other farmers were doing, many of them had to rent additional cropland or in other ways find ways to try to support their two families.
Well, I think that Ben is probably an example of people who are looking to diversify and do some creative things on the farm. You know, it's been a monoculture for some time, and I hear from all quadrants that really a lot more farmers are doing more diverse things right now. Look at the farmers' markets and all the products that are brought to the farmers' markets throughout the state. And there's more truck farming. We're all aware of the vineyards we have in Iowa now. And so Ben and his father are really exploring things that are very, very timely in Iowa agriculture. And I think that if you fast forward 10 years, this might not be quite that unique. You know? So it's really refreshing to see new people doing new things. For new reasons, even though they might be on a sensory farm.
Yes. I think one of the things that program last night highlighted was just how many people are on sensory farms. And, of course, part of what's so remarkable about that is that means they survived the farm crisis of the 80s. They survived the Dust Bowl. There was one farmer last night who talked about, I think he lost some land in the farm crisis. But obviously, the ones who are still here are the survivors, the ones who hung on and were able to make a success of it through all conditions.
Well, you've got to be creative because I can't think of a more riskier occupation than farming in terms of all the variables, the markets, the weather, all kinds of things that you have no control over. It's a very big gamble. And then when you do new things that are untried and not prevailed upon by your neighbors to do, such as a variety of new crops that are new to you, that also is a risk because you're learning as you're doing, and everything on the farm is for keeps, you know. Once you put the seed in the ground and it grows up, you have to deal with what happens at the time that it matures and what the price is. And boy, I don't think there's any a boring time on the farm. There's always something that could go wrong.
Yes. And what people that grows.
Yes, yes. I think all of us who grew up on farms are products of the farm, too. And I think that documentary last night, and we'll talk more with Laurel about this, the producer, but clearly farming is a way of life. You know, it's not the same as having the five-and-dime store in the family for 100 years. It's a way of life that's been lived and continues to be lived by real people. Ben, are you there?
Yes, I am.
I'm sorry. There must have been some sort of radiation from the sun or something. We lost you.
Right.
While we were waiting for you, I talked a little about our conversation on the phone the other day and about your mentors, and we were trying to conjecture about what you are doing on the farm that is new. Why do you, with an education degree in agriculture, need mentors at this stage for farming? What are you learning?
Well, I guess it kind of goes back to what we were touching on of trying to have more income come off the same amount of land for two generations. And so, you know, we can't really do what we've been doing for 100 years. We need to diversify a little bit more and find more niche markets. And so that means our whole operation has to learn new things to try to develop a little more income off the same amount of land.
So what are those new things that you're learning?
I guess, you know, we're trying to find more niche markets. We do some organic stuff and some grass-fed stuff and then also, like, I want to get more into vegetable production and farmers markets and different little enterprises like that.
Organic is really hard to get certified. Is it? What are you doing for organic?
Well, I guess my dad has kind of done that since I was little. So he's with corn and beans, alfalfa, barley, our row crops are actually all certified organic, and that's kind of just, you know, how we feel the land should be used, and then it also kind of has a little more economic impact back to the farm as well.
Well, that's rather unique, isn't it, to have organic corn and soybeans? I think we've lost him again.
Bad luck day for Ben and us, but I like what he's doing, and I endorse it. And if anyone asks me, I'll say, Ben is cool.
Maybe we can go for some music.
Yes, let's have some music.
The phones are still not working, so we can't talk to Laurel Berkmeyer, the producer of Iowa Century Farms. But we have a guest with us, actually, who came in for the last part of the program, which will be about music. And she just happens to have grown up on a century farm and has some really interesting things to tell us about. It's Marcia Miller, who didn't even get introduced in the beginning. Such a walk-on.
Yes, my great-grandfather came from Virginia in 1847 and purchased land south of Ottumwa in 1848. And we have the deed for that signed by President Polk or his secretary.
Yes, and you have it with you, but this isn't television.
Right. I just wanted to be able to remember it, the whole thing. And my mother grew up on that farm. Their son, my mother's father, grew up on that farm, and I grew up on that farm. I didn't live there, but I was there as much as I could possibly be there with my grandparents, and they never chose to modernize. It was like at Living History Farms my whole life. It was a wonderful place for a child to grow up. And then when my grandparents died in 1860, the farm was sold, but sold to a neighbor, so we are very close to it and have stayed in touch with the people there.
Well, I understood you had some other stories.
1960.
Yeah, 1960, yes.
So it was a century farm when I was 5 years old.
Yes.
Already, yeah.
And did you feel bad about giving it up?
I've always wanted to own it. I've never been able to, so I've stayed in touch, good friends with the people who bought it in 1960. I grew up with them, actually, because they were neighbors. And, yes, I felt terribly bad. The day they had the auction, I cried all day.
How old were you then?
About 12.
Yeah.
But then I went out and stayed with the people that bought it when I was a kid also, and so stayed in touch. But did you want me to mention about the 80s?
Sure.
In the 1980s, during the farm crisis, my friend who was then farming, he was in bad shape and close to losing it, but he decided to raise dairy meat and dairy goats and sheep because there was a large Southeast Asian community around Ottumwa, and that saved it for him.
Now, this would have been the Laotian migration. Yeah. Well, mm-hmm. This is an interesting side story because, of course, that farm was saved because Governor Ray opened mm-hmm. our arms, mm-hmm. basically, mm-hmm. our state, to
immigration.
To these refugees. Mm-hmm. So is he still raising goats?
No, actually, it is cattle now. But that's because it changed hands again. The fellow died, and my friend died, and so we went down for the sale, and it's changed hands, and we're still in touch with the young man who owns it, and he's raising cattle now.
How large was the farm?
Initially, the 160 acres that most people got in those days. I believe it was $1.25 an acre.
Yes, back in the homestead.
In 1846.
Well, I guess it would be quite expensive to buy it back now.
Yes, very much so. And I, you know, we didn't want to live down there, too far from the airport. So I just keep in touch. We visit. Oh, yes. In the early days of the state, I believe every section was required to have a school.
Yes, we did a program on country schools a couple
and
of weeks ago.
The school was on my grandpa's property as well.
Oh, it was?
So both my parents went there.
Uh-huh.
And it was still standing until just a few years ago. They were storing hay in it. As a child in the 50s, it didn't close until the late 50s.
It didn't?
No. The kids were still going there. And we would go out for all the programs and things that they would have.
Now, it was an elementary school?
Yes. Mm-hmm. It was the Hazel Dell.
And it was, up to eighth grade?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And at one point, my grandpa was like the superintendent or whatever of the school.
Yes. Well, school practices have really changed a lot. I mean, for example, when we had the program on country schools, someone recalled that when they had the school buses, first school buses, which were horse-drawn, mm-hmm. that an eighth-grade girl was the driver. And, of course, last week when we talked with Dennis Keeney, in his book he mentioned the thrill of driving a tractor at 7, and you drove a tractor at 8. Is that
right,
Paul?
I started very early, too. We didn't pay much attention to age requirements. You did the work you were able to do. And I suppose we did a lot of things that by today's standards would be dangerous for a child.
Well, not only dangerous, but illegal. I happen to notice that one of the things that Ben Wise teaches in his agricultural education class, well, it's not even in the class. It's a special certification. It's like driver's ed.
Mm-hmm.
They have to have a certification to drive a tractor, and they have to be a certain age. And I think at least 16. Of course, the tractors have changed.
My grandfather never had a tractor. He farmed with his horses until he quit farming in 1950.
Well, I farmed with an old B. John Deere and a 1948 Ferguson, and we were very intimate with the soil because it blew in our face. Now, I'll tell you, a farm boy, just in the process of living through another week, it has at least a mouthful of dirt. So I feel that I have antibodies against every disease known to man. And, of course, we had our shirts off sitting on the tractor all day in the hot sun. I envied the people who had those John Deere umbrellas, you know, but we were out there in the elements. I should have all kinds of skin lesions on me by now. I really lucked out. I don't know how I escaped that. And, you know, it was cold plowing in the fall, hot cultivating in the summer, brisk seeding oats in the spring. It was never the right temperature out there unless it was the middle of July, and we were doing the oats harvest. That was my favorite time. Or I liked to bale hay,
mm-hmm.
you know, that
mm-hmm.
chaff. And someone would bring lunch to the field, and there'd be the chocolate cake with the sticky white frosting that came off with the wax paper. And drinking the water out of the jar and letting it run down your chest and trace patterns in the chaff on your sweat. This is getting dramatic. But it's all coming back to me now.
Well, one of the things that at least one of the farmers in the program last night talked about was the pleasure of all this hard work. And in fact, I'm sure that it goes both ways. I mean, I'm sure that there's some farm kids who grow up and the work was so overwhelming that when they can get away from it, well, it was fine. I'm glad I did that maybe, but I'd like to have a job where I can work indoors or at least not get up at 4 a.m. to feed the kids.
This is actually Abe Lincoln's story. He left the farm as soon as he could at the age of 18. That was hard work, and his father, Thomas, didn't really think Abe was a good worker. He thought he leaned on the shovel too much. And Abe was always dreaming of something over the horizon. And so there's always been an exodus off the farm to some degree. And you have to love that. You have to identify with it. But the satisfactions are there. You're working for yourself. You don't have a boss. And there's really no time clock. There's no time to say, well, it's quitting time until the sun goes down or until the field's done. And it's very tangible, very, very hard work. But at the same time, when you get it done and you go back to the house and wash up and put your foot up on the chair, and oh, a lot of satisfaction because you did that and it got done and you can tell where you started and when you finished. And it's very, very tangible. And very, very finite and very, very satisfying because it's yours.
My grandparents had daughters, and my mother and her sister. And so when the time came to turn it over to the next generation, neither daughter wanted to do that. So that was the only reason it sold. I was crushed. I wanted to do it, but I was too young. But neither of the daughters' husbands wanted to do it either, and so that's why they sold it.
Oh, I know several women here in Story County who are the proprietors of farms.
Oh, yeah, that would have been great.
In those days, you know, there were such rigid sex roles. Well, that's vanished now, and we see that in all kinds of occupations. But on the farm, it really is pronounced because it doesn't matter anymore what your identity is. You can farm, and nobody is going to stand in your way.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that all the men who are farming deeply respect these women and see them as equals. And that's really changed because there was a division of labor on our farm. Mom did not do anything except gather eggs. The rest of it was all indoor, and she had plenty to do.
Mm-hmm.
But nowadays, there just really is no division of labor. A woman will be operating the tractor and doing all the things that were traditional men jobs, just like men do. So there's been emancipation on the farm.
They don't maybe have so much of things like canning that they used to have to do, or gardens. At Thanksgiving, we talked to a couple of people who'd grown up on farms, a man and a woman. The man stressed shucking corn and being what he did as a little boy. Instead of driving a tractor, he remembered how he was able to bring in the corn. And that was the big thing about Thanksgiving, was that if the corn was in, you really had a celebration. Otherwise, you had to go right out and bring in the corn. And the woman talked about how they prepared the food, how they cured meat, how her mother cooked, and how over a I guess they were coal stoves or wood stoves.
They were cob stoves. People mm-hmm. put cobs in there, and cobs were very good. They lasted a long time, and they glowed with a red-hot fever, you know. And the women who cooked on them were just as accurate in estimating how you cooked on those as with a modern-day range you can set according to numbers. So it was an art form, you know, and they did it very well. And, of course, corn picking, since it was done by hand, often stretched into the Thanksgiving Day holiday. So
yeah, it was. But what struck me was how different their memories were because of the work that
division
they,
of labor,
the yeah. division of labor, and so it was a real. Both of those jobs mm-hmm. were very, very vital. In fact, the man, I think I asked at one point how did you eat during the Depression, and he said it depended on how big your garden was,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and of course that was what the women did, was they took care of the gardens, which were mostly, I think, probably for their families.
The gardens and the chickens.
The gardens and the chickens, mm-hmm. yes. And occasionally, if you had a cow, you had butter.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
And milk. And so it was a very different, true, of necessity, diversified farming.
Yeah, I really miss the animals. I live on our family farm. All the animals I have are farm cats, and they're wonderful. They keep the mice out, but I look out at the empty corral and the barn, and I think, boy, there used to be 100 hearts beating on this place besides my own, and I miss the livestock and the aroma even. I don't miss the flies. We had a large number. If you didn't have a screen door in your house, you were sunk because we had 1 million flies per square foot.
Of all those fly things hanging down.
Right, the old fly paper. Mm-hmm. And I haven't seen that for years. I suppose it still exists, but that's a fond memory. You know, looking back, the things that were pestilence then and kind of inconvenient now somehow become warm, nostalgic memories. I don't know what the process is, but that's what happens. And I really think that I became a halfway decent singer because we had a two-row cultivator, and I went back and forth and back and forth, and I sang the whole score of Carousel, Oklahoma, South Pacific, and it wasn't even noon yet.
I see it's half past, and I think I will take a station break and then explain, and maybe we'll segue into what Marty came here. And Marcia came along just to be a companion and who didn't realize you were going to be a star of the show.
We're going out for breakfast.
Going out for breakfast. Right. So for those of you who just tuned in, this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. And I'm one of your hosts for today, Susan Franzen. My co-host, Paul Wearson, has been talking about farm memories with Marcia Miller and Ben Wise, who was on the phone with us. And we have a bad phone connection, so the guest that we had planned for the first part of the program, Laurel Bergmeier, who was the producer of Iowa Public Television's Iowa Century Farms, is not able to be heard by our phone system. So we're going to switch to what Marty came in to talk about, and Lance Sumter, and we'll just switch over to talking about the Harmelies.
Oh, thank you, Susan. What an exciting program this was, and we have some exciting things coming up. Two young women are coming to Ames to sing and to play their music. They're the Harmelies, and they are wonderful. I am very looking forward and excited about having them here. And they're actually folk singers, and they've been traveling the country singing some of their folk songs and Americana songs, and they have written much of their own music here. So they are originally, well, they met in college at Belmont College in Nashville, Tennessee, and they still live in Nashville, Tennessee. And they have been, on the road for at least a couple of months now. So they'll be coming to Ames, actually on my invitation, on Wednesday, March 11th, and that will be right here at this studio here from 7 to 8:30. And they will be singing their wonderful things. What I love about this group is their harmonies. They have some wonderful harmonies in their music here. And then a week from now on this program, Local Talk, they will be here and they will be talking about what they've been doing and how they got into music and their songs and how they write their songs and giving us a sampling of their music. So that'll be great here.
I'll be here and talking with them, and I'm sure they have all kinds of stories from the road. And they're very young. They're just out of college.
Right.
The two of them are touring. And I bet someday, I'm predicting this with great confidence, they'll write a book about this trip.
I bet they have a whole bunch of stories to tell. And I hope they do write a book. That's for sure. Yeah.
And you're going to be very important to their engagement here. You're actually hosting them and taking care of them to make sure they see their way around Ames and don't get lost in the big city.
Yeah. Well, Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, and I hope we have a nice crowd here. Yeah.
That will be right here at the Pantorium.
Right at the Pantorium.
Which is also the KHOI studio. What's the time again, Marty?
They'll be here. Their concert starts at 7. And so at 7 o'clock, a week from today.
But at 7 a.m., they're going to be on Local Talk, right?
Yeah. We're Local Talk at 7 a.m. 7 a.m., they'll be here, Local Talk, and 7 in the evening, they'll be presenting their concert.
And the people who can't make it down can listen to the rebroadcast of our 7 a.m. program. So we're just going to be...
There's no excuse to not tune in.
That's right.
You have plenty of opportunities.
That's right.
Well, speaking of opportunities, we have with us Lance Sumter, the blue-collar philosopher who at 10 to midnight.
10 to midnight. Thank you for helping me know when I have the show. Yeah, glad you were here.
I hope you get there at 10.
I will. And I'll stay all the way till midnight.
Okay, and you were going to play some of the harmonies
in
your program.
I met Marty just a couple of weeks ago, and Marty has supplied me with some music. Right now I have two of the bands that you're associated with, the Fiddle Chicks and... 4 Mile Creek, and I'm going to play some Barn Owls, but we are also going to have music by the Harmalies this Friday night from 10 till midnight.
Oh, great.
So that's pending we're able to get a hold of some. I don't have any right now, but I'm depending on you or...
We have CDs.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, excellent.
Or I guess we have a CD. This is their first CD, right?
The Harmalies have... I think they have 3 out now.
Oh, okay. Really?
Yeah.
I guess I didn't see that.
Yeah, they have 3. But the latest one, which is called Pretty Picture, Dirty Brush, and that's from a line from there. Actually, you know, talking to my musician friends around the country that have heard them and who said, hey, Marty, you better go and listen to these young ladies. They're really good. They really are humorous. They have some really good humor in their presentation here. So I'm really looking forward to a nice, friendly evening, fun evening.
You know, I think it's interesting that we're talking about young musicians right now in the fact that the first half of the show had to do with family farms. Yeah. They all have this grassroots, real down-to-earth kind of feel for them. I mean, young girls going toward being musicians these days, traveling, that's not an easy proposition.
Pretty risky, yeah.
And you have to make your money stretch, too.
You might be able to stay
with host families or something like that.
Sure.
The main thing is it's an adventure, and somewhere out there, there's 4 parents who are really worried.
That's the truth. They are.
Well, and it's fortunate that, you know, families like that have families like KHOI. I mean, I know that Marty and Sue and, you know, the other folks down here at KHOI are very, very concerned about making sure the girls come in and have, you know, good accommodations.
That's right.
Great opportunities.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely here.
And I think people who enjoy this kind of music are people who are also very humane and human sensitive and helpful and supportive. There aren't many nasty people who like folk music. You know?
That's true.
You could tell that these young ladies are not into the money part of this because we'll have a bucket out there for some donations, but that's about it. Just come and listen, and they just love to just present their music.
There's a certain purity to that, isn't there?
There is.
There's no agent with a big cigar saying, here's the girls, you have to pay them a lot of money, and let's get out of here.
That's right.
I think that's just a music close to the origin, you know, and people. It's an intimate experience down here at the Pantorium. Yeah. It's intimate just when you walk in the door. This used to be a cleaning establishment at one time, so it's going to be very, very intimate for the girls, and they're not going to have to project across a big concert hall.
No. And they actually requested that. They want to do small venues rather than big concert halls.
That makes sense.
Have one of their songs if you'd like to play
absolutely.
A preview.
Yeah, let's hear that.
Speaking of money, it's called Collecting the Change.
Oh, really?
Okay, yes.
Collecting my chains. Oh. clear out, that's okay, I'll start again today. I'll keep collecting my change for you, babe. For you, babe.
This is KHOI Community Radio, and you've been listening to Unexpected Stories of Century Farms. We had planned some wonderful phone interviews, and our phone connections are not working very well, so we are fortunate to have had Marcia Miller, who grew up on a Century Farm, who came here just to be a support for Marty Miller, who is here as the impresario. Is that what you are?
I can't even spell it, but that's what I am.
You're doing a good job being one.
Yeah, for the Harmelays.
For the Harmelays, right.
And who are coming next will be our program next week.
Wonderful musicians. You know, it's interesting because talk about Century Farms. You know what they did for entertainment on a Saturday evening?
Sure.
They went into the barn and they put the hay on the side, and then they got someone that played guitar and someone that played fiddle and someone that played banjo, and they played music and people danced to
that.
That
was a rich way of life.
Yeah, that's right. Well, Marcia's grandfather was a fiddler, and he actually had a band, three or four people there, and that's what they did.
She just showed me the picture, his photograph of him with his
fiddle and... So yeah,
a banjo and a guitar. Is
guitar
that...
player and that's how they entertain themselves.
Well, I think that's just the most American of music. The two genre I think of is jazz, mm-hmm. and of course folk music. When you look at the Appalachians and all the great traditions and the
right.
tangible families we knew in our own lifetime, Johnny Cash family, you have all these people who really came from the earth, and their earliest memory is of mom and dad and the cousins and aunts and uncles and grandfathers strumming a guitar or playing all the instruments
Absolutely.
That are available to a farmer. And I think that you just can't get a more American genre than that, something close to the earth, and it somehow has remained hauntingly the same across the ages,
That's an interesting point about remaining the same, and I think that has to do mm-hmm. with the human condition being, there's some things that we just automatically, we humans, have in common, and that need to express ourselves through music and through creative ways. I think that's one thing that keeps it pure. And these girls going, on their tour, not making a lot of money, that keeps you really close to
That's
living
right.
on the edge,
right.
which creates great energy for writing music.
It does, right. And that's what a lot of their music is about, and just the living on the road and being a musician and the fun things of life, too. They're very upbeat, by the way.
Marty, you were talking about the energy in a community where they would get together on the weekends and play music.
Yeah.
Those sort of things seem to don't happen anymore, the barn dances. But what happens, that's why I think community radio is so important in connecting people like, musicians like this to the community,
right.
because those old methods of connecting just for, whatever reason, aren't there anymore.
But there is still a light there. There's
yes,
still
sir.
A flame there,
yes,
and the Barn Owl Band has kept the barn dances going here. So every fourth Saturday, we do a barn dance, and we have a lot of young people that come to our barn dance, and we have a caller, and we go through some of the dances that have been in existence for centuries. And they're not hard, and anybody could do it. You don't need to know anything about dancing. If you know your left foot from your right foot, come and dance.
And that's another reason it's such a rich tradition. If you look at folk music from the Appalachian area or any other part of the country, it's distinctly different from one region to another according to what immigrant groups came. So a lot of this can be traced to Scottish backgrounds, Irish backgrounds,
Absolutely.
And all kinds of different even the Balkan countries. The origins of it come into a melting pot that becomes an American genre of its own, but you can always trace it to some ethnic group or part of Europe where these folks brought that to the country, as well as all the talent and energy they had as immigrants.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. Here.
So that's just wonderful, and these are the modern day heirs to that. And I just had a fantasy that, you know, what if 30 years down the road we were taking our kids to Harmelay Land?
Yeah.
And I said Dolly Parton had to start somewhere.
Yeah, that's right.
That's correct.
That's right. Here. Absolutely.
Harmelay Land. Well, just you know, I knew them when they were young and small.
That's right.
Well, actually, the other thing that intrigued me about this group when I went online to follow them was we like to do road trips here on KHOI. Paul and I have gone out to Madrid and Boone and Jefferson on our road trips. Well, the Harmelays are doing a big road trip, and you can follow on Facebook where they are each day and Facebook, website, whatever. But you can see where they're going, where they've been, and they're on this road trip. And
yeah, I guess they're coming to us from Wyoming.
Wow.
And that's a trip. You know, they're going to make
yes.
it all the way from Wyoming to Ames, Iowa. And I've talked to them. They are looking forward to this. They've never been in Iowa.
I love people like this. The sense of adventure, the creative expression.
That's right.
I only hope someone will have the presence of mind to buy them a maid right. If they're going to be in Iowa.
Not in Ames. You can't buy maid rights here anymore.
That's a shame, because you should really have a maid right.
That's right.
You know, before you die anyway. It's on the bucket list for most people.
Yeah. Especially those who want to come to Iowa.
Oh, yeah. You've got to really get hot for maid rights. And no ketchup. It's got to be only pickles, onions, and mustard, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
No, it's just delightful because, you know, as we all have talked about here, when the word community occurs in any sentence, it brings up to my mind this basic human quality of a desire to relate to each other in a caring way and share things that we all can relate to. And, you know, I come from an era. I was in college in the 60s. Marty, you and I are about the same age group. We remember Peter, Paul, and Mary and all these people. Yeah. And I just thought that genre, it was the height of its popularity then. Mm-hmm. But it still survives, and people still do that wonderful close harmony. And there are people who show up to do a performance who don't need pyrotechnics and two semi-trucks and
that's
all
right.
kinds of fireworks. And that's just the heart of the music business, as it always has been, and hopefully a segment of it always will be. So these girls are pioneers as well as young people.
Yep.
They're pioneers, too.
Pioneers in music, and so they're carrying on the tradition.
That's beautiful, and I'm glad you're the conduit to make it happen here in Des Moines. So,
well, in Ames, yes.
I was in Des Moines the other day. It stuck.
Yes.
We're in Ames today, ladies and gentlemen.
Right.
But I really think that it's very good.
Well,
I
love to
promote
that. I love to bring new things to our community. Yes. And
now we must say that Marty is in the Barn Owl Band.
I am. I'm the upright bass player.
Right. I've never all bass players are upright.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Very good reputation.
Yeah, okay. Thank you, Paul.
Yes. No, we've had a lot of fun today. And I think that from Sensory Farms to the great music of the folk era and the modern day folks who are still doing it, and I think that we do have that to look forward to once again, the 11th, March 11th, and we'll be on Daylight Saving Time by that time.
Oh, yeah.
And that will be at 7 p.m. here at the Pantorium.
Right.
It's downtown, right across from the Octagon.
That's right.
And a tattoo parlor. You can have everything done while you're down
there. What else do you need? Yeah, I guess, you got it all.
But we don't have a maid right. That's the only
thing. That's the only thing. We sure need one.
But I think it's going to be fun. That's a week from today, actually, isn't it?
Yeah, a week from today.
And so we'll look forward to the Harmelays.
Yes, and we'll have a very exciting program that morning. Everything live.
Live is wonderful. And I remember growing up in the 50s, some very famous people made some very bad mistakes on live TV, and there was nothing to do about it. One night, Jackie Gleason broke his leg.
Oh.
Yeah, he didn't even show up for the final curtain, so it can be risky, this broadcast.
Well, yes, next week we're going to have the Harmelays actually playing and singing in our studio. And we had that experience once before during our fund drive, which we didn't have quite so much fund drive part as they had on Iowa Public Television for Iowa Century Farms. And we had Aaron O'Neill live in the studio, and that was a really exciting. Yeah. And with
a fine fiddle player.
Yes, with Rick Exner playing
guitar.
I guess I was sitting next to Marty. I wasn't sitting next to the fiddle player, but it was very close, and it was fantastic experience just to have all this live music right here in the studio. And that's the way it's going to be next week, and I hope it sounds as thrilling on the air as it does here in the studio. But, of course, you can hear her live in the evening, too.
Well, yes, we've had a great day today, and thank you. We just had a great conversation. We had Marty and Marcia Miller and the blue-collar philosopher, Lance Sumter, who has a fort named after him, apparently.
Apparently.
Yes, and I think we have something coming up here in Nevada. Next weekend, the Nevada High School Musical will be Once Upon a Mattress, presented March 6th, 7th, and 8th at the Josephine Tope Community Auditorium. Karen Niblock, who spoke with us last fall about the Nevada High School's Halloween place, is equally enthusiastic about the spring musical involving more than 60 students. That's Once Upon a Mattress, next weekend, March 6th, 7th, and 8th at the Josephine Tope Community Auditorium. Then the Des Moines Area Community College will be presenting Francine's Will by Mary Dottillo, performed at 7:30 p.m. Friday, March 6th, and Saturday, March 7th, in the Boone Campus Theater. So we have two major theatrical events going on here.
This is KHOI Community Radio. Your hosts for today, Paul Wearson and Susan Franzen. Our guests have been Marty and Marcia Miller and Lance Sumter, and we've had a very exciting morning here. The show was engineered by Rebecca Brown, and with even a little additional assistance from Rick Morrison, who still wasn't able to get our phones working. And the music you heard was from The Plow That Broke the Panes by Virgil Thompson, performed by the Post Classical Ensemble, directed by Angel Gil Ordinez. Pastoral was the selection we heard. And from the Harmelays, from their CD, Pretty Picture Dirty Brush, we heard Collecting My Change. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
Now, you can also listen to this show and all of our past local talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org, where we are streaming it live. You'll find recent shows on our homepage with links to the organizations and other resources mentioned on our shows.
If you enjoyed this show, tell your friends and consider becoming one of the 500 families donating $20 per month or $250 per year to help us meet our operating expenses and maybe a new phone system for our studio. Though we'd appreciate whatever fits into your budget. We'd also like to hear your feedback either by phone at 515-292-2878 or by email at khoiradio@gmail.com with news in the subject line. Or stop in at the KHOI studios at 410 Douglas in Ames.
Is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 515-292-2878. Your participation as audience and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thank you for listening and
see you again on the radio. Thank you.
it's creeping in. You always say you've had a rugged day. Ooh, must be hard living like a movie star. But apparently it's too tough for me to see. Pretty, pretty living ain't easy. Pretty, pretty living ain't easy. You've got no money to your name, but you got a new Gibson to play. Ooh, must be hard living like a movie star. But apparently too tough for me to see. Pretty, pretty living ain't easy. Pretty, pretty living ain't easy.
Something wrong with me. There's gotta be something wrong.